K-Mud Podcast presents.
The truth is to know when not to lie, when not to lie.
You want to know what the truth is? The truth is to know when not to lie. Me in the clouds resting up, here on the hillside, smoking more than I should, but not as much as I want, considering some kind of worked out sort of compromise. Thoughts loosed, chasing concepts of truthing and lying, with most everyone's obsessing on their own versions of demanded truths in the great condemning of the lie. Still, most everyone's keep playing a game of avoidings in the making believe of if they don't call their lies lies, what is it makes they don't call their lies not really lies? A doing unto others, what we keep doing unto ourselves. Something's going on in ourselves that need explainings. Anyway, fears, self-judgments, twist most everything into a blame, a rationalization, a justification, or a denial. What are these things that we keep calling not really lies? Private hidden negatives, most everyone self-projects. They threw our heads, never realizing what we are realizing. Negatives we've been fed since childhood about ourselves. Lies we're repeatedly told until we repeatedly believe them. Participating in life, living in the lies of we're guilty from birth. A way of seeing the world while we argue about who's lying. Abstracting the truth. In a righteousness that no one can win, not recognizing the truths that there's nothing wrong with us. The most dangerous lies are self-told. Diminishing self-esteem, when delusion takes the places of seeing our own goodness. Judgments devour the sacred, of seeing sacreds from within. The mistakes that get made along the way are truths to learn. These quarrelings about truths and lies get lost in the quarrel. Truths and lies get told and retold until they start to look alike. Carrying the lies we've been told about ourselves as our truth. A chaos of truthing versus lying creates it's hard to recognize.
Wanna know what the truth is?
You want to know what the truth is?
The truth is to know.
The truth is to know when not to lie.
Good morning and welcome to Heart of the Earth. This is a program about Native Americans and other Indigenous cultures. My name is Agnes and I'll be with you until 10 a.m. And I opened with John Trudell's When Not to Lie. And I'm sure it's very obvious why I would start with a song like that today. After all the lies that just keep coming out. especially what they did on Saturday after they murdered Alex Petrie. Oh, they said he was brandishing a gun and shooting at him, and they had to shoot him down. And we all saw the videos. We know that's one big fat lie. White House call him a terrorist assassin. Lies, 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 and more lies. But you see, videos don't lie. And when you try to alter them, you can see the lie. What happened to that ICU nurse was murder. Murder, murder, murder by two agents. Two of Trump's goons. And that's what they are. Goons. And, you know, when you think of ICE, it's not the Gestapo. ICE is the descendant of slave patrols. ICE is the descendant of the indigenous child abductors for boarding schools. Yes, when they sent those people out there to steal the native children. ICE is the descendant of the Jim Crow South law enforcement. ICE is the descendant of Knight Riders. So before the U.S. looks to anyone else's history to equate what ICE is like, the U.S. needs to remember its own history. And remember that many modern-day atrocities were inspired by how this country treated its marginalized. Because that's what Hitler did when he wanted to decide what to do with the Jewish people. He looked to what the United States did to their native people. But he didn't put them on reservations. He put them in concentration camps. And this has just got to stop. And when I look at all those thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of people in Minneapolis out there in minus 12 degrees, they're not protesting. They're not demonstrating. They're resisting. They are resisting. And that's what it's going to take. I want to share this with you from Native News Online. I just so much appreciate Levi Rickard and his writing. And he says, soon after the January 24 death of Alex Petrie, a 37-year-old intensive care unit Veterans Affairs nurse who was shot and killed by Border Patrol agents on Saturday, Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem labeled him a domestic terrorist. She then blamed state and local authorities in Minnesota for the killing, implying that their policies were the root cause of the Border Patrol agent firing 10 shots at close range, killing Petrie instantly. And it was two agents. They've now come out and say two agents. Well, Noem characterized the policies as permissive sanctuary city measures, asserting that jurisdictions that shelter criminals and refuse cooperation with federal authorities contribute to unsafe environments. And I want to interject here. Yeah, ICE yesterday tried to go into the Ecuador consulate in Minneapolis. They try to go in there and raid a consulate. And under international law, that's a no-no. You cannot go into any consulate and arrest anybody. Once they get inside that building, other side of that gate, once they get on that property, you cannot touch them. And they just thought, we're going to go in there anyway and do it. But they were stopped in their tracks. The audacity of them trying to do that. To continue, she urged Minnesota leaders to work more closely with federal law enforcement, specifically by turning over individuals with serious criminal histories to U.S. immigration and law enforcement instead of releasing them so they could be detained and deported. Sanctuary cities, communities that have chosen to prioritize public safety, human dignity, and trust between residents and local government are now under direct assault by federal immigration authorities. What we are witnessing is not simply an immigration enforcement strategy. It is a deliberate use of federal power as a political weapon. Sanctuary policies exist for a reason. They are designed to ensure that immigrants, documented or not, can report crimes, seek medical help, send their children to school, and interact with local authorities without fear that doing so will lead to detention or deportation. As Native Americans know, when trust exists between communities and law enforcement, everyone is safer. When that trust is destroyed, crime goes unreported, victims stay silent, and entire neighborhoods are pushed further into the shadows. Yet, the Trump administration has chosen to make sanctuary cities a political target. In Minneapolis, St. Paul, New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, and other cities deemed sanctuary cities, ICE and other federal agents have intensified their operations, flooding neighborhoods, conducting aggressive raids, and sowing fear among families who have lived, worked, and contributed to these communities for years. And I just want to interject here. President Biden, yeah, he deported so many more than Trump has, so many more. But he did it the correct way. He didn't send ICE into neighborhoods killing people. But, you know, the lies that, you know, the White House and Trump tell will never let you know that. To continue, these actions are being carried out despite the clear wishes of local governments and direct opposition to policies adopted by city councils, mayors, and residents. This is not about public safety. It's about control. It's about fear. In recent weeks, we have seen federal lawsuits, funding threats, and aggressive enforcement actions aimed squarely at these communities. In Minnesota, some 3,000 heavily armed federal agents have operated in neighborhoods already traumatized by years of over-policing and violence. Protests erupted after an ICE agent killed 37-year-old Minnesotan Renee Good on January 7th, 2026. Instead of reflection or restraint, the response from Washington has been more force, more intimidation, more spectacle. For Native people, none of this feels new. We know what it looks like when the federal government decides that certain communities are, quote, problems to be managed rather than human beings to be respected. We know what it looks like when laws are enforced selectively, when jurisdictions are punished for asserting their own values, and when military-style tactics are used against civilian populations. Our history is filled with forced removals, broken treaties, and federal policies that claimed legality while delivering devastation. The rhetoric may be different today, but the machinery is familiar. Sanctuary cities are being framed as lawless. Their leaders are being portrayed as reckless. Immigrants are being dehumanized, again, as threats rather than neighbors. The narrative is not accidental. It is politically useful. It creates a, quote, enemy. It justifies extraordinary measures, and it distracts from the real issues facing this country. Housing insecurity, health care access, climate change, and economic inequality. The cruelty is not a side effect. It is the point. What makes this moment even more dangerous is the normalization of it all. We are being conditioned to accept armored vehicles in neighborhoods, to accept masked agents conducting operations with little transparency, to accept that some people deserve fewer rights because of where they were born. History teaches us where this road leads, and it never leads anywhere good. Native communities should be paying close attention. Today, it is immigrants. Tomorrow, it could be water protectors, protesters, journalists, anyone deemed inconvenient or disobedient. Solidarity is not a slogan. It is a necessity. The same systems that once justified the removal of our ancestors from their homelands are now being used to justify the removal of our neighbors from their homes. The same language of law and order that was used to break treaties and criminalize Native existence is being used again. Sanctuary cities are not the problem. They are one of the few remaining moral counterweights to a political climate that has grown increasingly comfortable with cruelty. A nation that governs through fear is not strong. It is failing. A government that treats human beings as disposable is not enforcing justice. It is abandoning it. And we've been listening to Brulé, One World, One Nation, from their great CD, One World. Well, I just wanted to, share these few words before I get into to the next opinion piece. Because as Indigenous people, you know, they've been warned and told to carry papers to prove who they are on their own land. And families are afraid to even leave their homes. You know, but this is not anything new. This is something that we've all seen before. The Removal Act, boarding schools, the 60s scoop, family separation dressed up as law. When the state decides who belongs, who's destroyed? The families. When I saw that picture last week of ICE going through the backpack of a 5-year-old boy, who's an American citizen, and him and his father were sent to Texas. But because of all everything going through in the courts, they're going to be released very soon. And this whole thing with ICE, you know, it's part of that same system of removal and control that for generations and generations of Indigenous people have had to endure. And I want to make it very clear that no human is illegal on stolen land. Families belong together. Families belong together. This is from Indian Country Today. The middle-aged woman screamed up the avenue, blinded by tear gas sprayed in her face by federal immigration officers. Onlookers poured bottled water in her eyes to calm the chemical burn, but couldn't ease the deeper pain, a pain that felt like heartbreak. The wave of U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers fanned out in and around Minneapolis's Twin Cities and in other U.S. cities is having what appears to be its desired effect, the sowing of fear and chaos in the hearts of the citizenry. It is a frightening and novel notion to many, but not in Indian Country, where federal efforts at intimidation and eradication began with the founding of the nations 250 years ago. Quote, what we're really seeing is a continuation of tactics that us as Native people are accustomed to, Rachel Dion Thunder, a Big Stone Cree Nation descendant and vice president of the Indigenous Protector Movement, told Indian Country Today. Quote, but what is happening now is that more American citizens are waking up to the reality of what it means to be existing under an authoritarian regime. We as Native people already know and understand that and have been fighting against it for generations. A day after federal officers shot and killed 37-year-old Alex Jeffrey Petty in Minneapolis, Minnesota, Governor Tim Walz on Sunday called for an end of the immigration crackdown known as Operation Metro Surge. He addressed President Donald Trump directly at a press conference. Quote, What do we need to do to get these federal agents out of our state? He asked. You thought fear, violence, and chaos is what you wanted from us, and you clearly underestimated the people of this state and nation. Walz was nodding to the widespread and largely peaceful response to the federal law enforcement surge in his state that included the incident with the woman tear gassed Saturday on Nicollet Avenue, just a block from where Pretty was killed. On Friday, an ICE out rally unmarched held in downtown Minneapolis drew some 50,000 citizens who braved sub-zero temperatures to call to an end to the immigration crackdown. Native people across the country see echoes of history resonating in Minneapolis and beyond. Quote, it's a repeat of history, and it's very unfortunate, Eugenia Charles Newton, a Navajo Nation council member, told Indian Country Today. Charles Newton was touring the Powwow Grounds Coffee House in the heart of Minneapolis, in the heart of the 8-block American Indian Culture Corridor in Minneapolis. The coffee house has transformed itself into the living, breathing center of the Native response to the federal law enforcement surge, primarily as a collection point and distribution center for food and supplies for community members afraid to venture from their homes for fear of being caught up in an immigration raid. Quote, we're in 2026 and we're seeing this happening again today. But the connection to the present landscape and Native experience with oppressive federal policies and actions and the long history of Native responses was given center stage Friday at the ICE Outmarch in Minneapolis. The march ended at the city's Target Center arena for speeches. The Target Center portion of the event opened with two Native people, Dion Thunder and Nick Estes, a Lower Brule Sioux tribe, a citizen and associate professor of American Indian Studies at the University of Minnesota. There are other elements of what is unfolding in Minneapolis with reverberations in history. Not only do heavy-handed federal actions feel familiar, but so do the Native reactions. Quote, all of you today are now feeling what we have been feeling for centuries, said Estes to some 10,000 people in the arena. Quote, this does not begin in December with Operation Metro Surge. This began centuries ago. This isn't something new or unique. This is a continuation. Minneapolis is the birthplace of the American Indian Movement, formed in 1968 to counter adverse experiences Native community members were having with law enforcement. The movement's many successes and second and third generation leaders are informing a strong and organized response to the federal presence on the streets. Quote, Minneapolis isn't the rest of the world, Michael Forcia, the Bad River Band of Chippewa citizen who is chairman of the Twin Cities chapter of the American Indian Movement, told Indian Country Today. Quote, we take this stuff seriously and we're not going to put up with it, violence and denigration from the authorities. Is it because of the Native presence in town? Quote, I would like to think so, he said. We are on the front lines, always. Attorney Chase Iron Eyes Oglala Lakota was more direct. Quote, there's some sacred reason why fascism and those who would seek to do violence against peaceful American families are finding that they have met their match in Minneapolis, he told ICT. Quote, because it's where the American Indian Movement began. It's because there are Native people here. We know what it's like to be free. We know freedom is in a different sense of that word. And all of America is welcome to know that freedom that we know. The Trump administration is not showing signs it plans to scale back its campaign of immigration enforcement that saw action in Los Angeles, Chicago, and the District of Columbia and elsewhere before launching in Minnesota and then spreading to Maine last week. And perhaps the generations of experience in Indian Country responding to federal pressure can spread too. And perhaps the generations of experience in Indian Country responding to federal pressure can spread. Quote, I think what a lot of Americans are really shocked by and a lot of the world is really shocked by is how the United States is treating its own citizens, Estes said. Quote, this isn't just an Indian problem. This is all of our problems. It is not new in indigenous community. We've seen this before. And that experience, despite all the heartache and trauma, sometimes breeds hope. Quote, they took our land. They took our spirituality. They took our culture. They took our family. They took everything away from us, Forcia said. Quote, but there's one thing that they will never be able to take, and that's our sense of humor. His message? Native people and Native nations are not going anywhere, backed up by strength and resilience as deeply honed as any found in human history. Just ask Navajo Nation Vice President Rochelle Montoya. She came to Minneapolis to testify during tribal consultations for the Violence Against Women's Act. She told of seeing Twin City Navajo citizens living in fear. Quote, they can't even go to the post office because ICE is there, and they're afraid that they're going to be targeted and detained for just being brown, she said. Quote, it reminds me of what our ancestors taught us, not just as Navajo ancestors, but Indian Country ancestors. We are all supposed to be here for one another. Native people have been questioned or detained by ICE agents across the country, including Peter Yahtzee, Navajo, 2 weeks ago. Agents detained Yahtzee and ignored Yahtzee's direction to documents providing U.S. and tribal citizenship. If Indian Country unites, we are strong, Montoya said, and that is what the United States government fears.
Bye.
and that was Elk Creek, Look at My People. And I want to share with you from Lisa Ballinger. She's the co-director of the American Indian Movement in Minneapolis. And she says that the federal occupation of Minneapolis proceeds as the United States Department of Homeland Security and its Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents continue to target the people of our communities. We're standing together just as we have always done. We are grateful for the outpouring at solidarity from so many across Turtle Island and the world. It's clear that with every act of violence against immigrants, natives, and allies, the world is watching and waking, and minds are changing, and it's about time. Here in my homelands, surveillance and violent enforcement measures are nothing new. The original peoples of Minnesota and the people of color everywhere across this land have long known brutalization at the hands of the federal government and law enforcement personnel. That's why it was right here in this place more than five decades ago that my mother, Pat, helped found the American Indian Movement. Today, the next generation continue to protect our and all people. There is very little that is lawful about the DHS occupation of our city, its racial profiling, including targeting of the original peoples of this land, and its officers' brutal tactics in the field. In addition to the high-profile murders of legal observers Renee Good and Alex Preeti, it has, on multiple occasions, detained tribal citizens. It must be repeated that tribal citizens are also U.S. citizens and have the original right to exist in our own homelands. Just today, our community responded to an ICE operation targeting Little Earth, a subsized housing complex in Minneapolis, mostly home to Native people. I dare anyone to explain a legitimate reason for targeting Little Earth. If the agency's mission, as stated by DHS officials, it is to find and apprehend dangerous migrants, this is an unlikely place to find them. It's time for DHS to leave Natives and all Minnesota alone. I thank you for understanding during these challenging times. Please continue to support the work of the American Indian Movement, Lakota Law, and the Women Warrior Project. All things progress. It will be as important as ever to stand united, including listening closely to Native people and other voices of color. We are the most experienced resistors. We've lived this reality for centuries, and we won't stop fighting for what is right. My gratitude for your solidarity with us, Lisa Ballinger. And I want to share with you from Julia Frusella. And in her latest Substack, she talked a lot about the American Indian Movement in Minneapolis, like I did last week. And, you know, she talked about all the things they've done and, you know, the longest walk and the takeover, you know, Washington, D.C. And that time is when John Trudell burned the American flag in front of the Hoover Building. And then that night, his pregnant wife, three children, and mother-in-law died in a very suspicious fire. She says, after talking about AIM, she says, we're now back in Minneapolis, January 2026, with brutal federal enforcement swarming Twin Cities, protests filling the streets, and community members describing a level of fear that changes how people move through their own neighborhoods. Everything from mass rallies and economic shutdown calls to arrest of clergy members during airport demonstrations. Indian Country Today reported that AIM patrols have returned along Franklin Avenue with volunteers watching over elders, youth, and community members as tensions rise. And here's what those patrols look like right now. There's a growing group of indigenous patrollers reported to be close to 100, and they start at 7 in the morning and go till 7 p.m. And leaders at the Minneapolis American Indian Center describe the atmosphere as one where people don't want to leave their homes. And in that same reporting, other groups were also named along AIM, such as the Many Shields Warrior Society, because this isn't one organization's responsibility. It's a community response to a community threat. And one more difference between 1968 and 2026, the tools. Back then, the moccasin telegraph was phone calls and word of mouth. Now it's cell phones and social media, which allow faster coordination, faster witness, faster turnout. The mission, though, is the same. Make sure people aren't alone out there and make sure rights don't vanish the moment a uniform shows up. This January has been defined by deadly force. On Saturday, January 24th, federal agents shot and killed Alex Jeffrey Pretty, a 37-year-old ICU nurse at the Minneapolis VA and a U.S. citizen. Federal officials framed it as self-defense, claiming he approached officers with a handgun during an enforcement operation, but multiple bystander videos and early reporting tell a different story. He appears to be holding a cell phone, and officials have not shown clear evidence that he brandished a weapon at a moment's force escalated. And then comes the spin. Border Patrol Gregory Bovino went on CNN and essentially tried to reverse the moral gravity of the whole thing by dodging direct questions and by leaning into the claim that agents prevented some imagined massacre. When pressed, Bovino moved with deflection. Wait for the investigation. The suspect inserted himself. Our officers are victims here. He has since been removed from that job. Like that makes any difference, because they sent Hogan, I believe it, whatever his name is, Hoan, and he's just as bad. He's the guy that took the $50 or $5,000, whatever it was, you know, bribe, and he got away with it. You know, and he goes, "I didn't do that," you know, and then now he's going to be the one investigating this. I mean, it's just a joke. Minneapolis is still reeling from the earlier killing of Renee Good during the same wave of enforcement and protest. It was another death that has been intensified public fear and rage, and another moment where official narratives and community witnesses have collided. That's the part people were trying to soften with passive language. An incident, self-defense. No, a federal enforcement presence expanded into a city, and two U.S. citizens ended up murdered, but in the span of weeks. And at the site where Alex Pretty died, crowds gathered to grieve in public, and the Native community was there too. On Instagram and and all their parts, they shared a video with the words of a young Native woman named Tal, where she said, "They can take bodies, but they can't take spirit." And they also sang a going home song, and I'm going to share with you in just a few minutes with that song and her words. And then the community did what they have always done in the moments like this. They sang a prayer song in the open air, a reminder that Minneapolis isn't just a battleground. It's a place with indigenous roots, indigenous responsibility, and indigenous medicine still moving through it. Long before anyone ends up in a courtroom or a detention center, ICE raids and enforcement shrink the radius of your life. It changes how you walk. They second guess whether it's safe to send a kid to the corner store or let an elder ride the bus alone. In Minneapolis, residents have described the fear of being stopped in public and forced to prove they belong here, a fear that doesn't stay confined to undocumented people when federal agents are operating broadly and aggressively. Communities like AIM are forming volunteer patrols and escorts because the Constitution doesn't feel like it's in the room anymore. This is how public safety becomes public terror. The vigil for Alex Pretty reminded me of what AIM has always known. Protection isn't only political. It's rational. It's spiritual. It's a refusal to let terror shrink our lives down to silence. That's when Franklin Avenue keeps showing the country. Minneapolis doesn't only protest. It organizes. It witnesses. It walks people home. It sings over the places where ICE tries to leave a brutal warning. And that's why AIM is back on the street in Minneapolis, where it started. When the system won't protect people, the community does what it has always done. They show up, they protect, and they resist. And I'm going to share with you now the song and the words.
Yeah. Dakota and Dakota people. These are Dakota lands that we are on right now.
Yes, they are. Yeah, that's right.
This very space is sacred land because our brother right here is taking his journey right here. But also, these lands are sacred lands.
Come on.
This community is very special in the world because we have Dakota, Lakota, our white allies, our black, our brown, our Latino, our Somali community. We welcome our immigrants. We don't play shame. We don't say this is ours, this is theirs. This is all of ours.
Come on.
We move with love no matter how much hate comes to our city and our people and our community.
Come on.
We are powerful together. Look around.
Come on.
There's all walks of life amongst us. So I just want to say that the Lakota and Dakota people, we welcome immigrants here.
Yeah.
We show them that they're accepted.
Come on.
And we're powerful together. Oh, that's you too.
And that was at Saturday evening, right at the place where Alex was murdered. And I want to share a song with you from Earl Bullhead. And that was the Four Directions song. I have another story about Minneapolis, and this is on a more positive note, because Heather Freely leads Team Kowe, the all-female indigenous snow carving team. Kowe means woman in the Ojibwe language. She said the three-person team is the only one of its kind in North America. Quote, one of the significance, too, of being a Kowe woman is that women are the keepers of the water. And so by sculpting with snow, we are protecting snow water as part of what we are doing, and we approach it as a spiritual practice, she said. The team did their first snow sculpture 5 years ago. The Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board named the public art installation Carved in Snow, Stories of Land and Legacy. The project highlights indigenous history, seasonal storytelling, and youth mentorship. The art installation includes four snow sculptures across riverfront parks near downtown Minneapolis. Each sculpture will represent one of the four seasons. During the second week of January, Team Kauai worked on the project's first sculpture at Mill Ruins Park. The sculpture depicts a merganser, a waterfowl, with flames emerging from its torso. Friedley said the sculpture's imagery is adapted from the stories of in the Ojibwe culture about the transition from winter to spring. Quote, the birds were singing their sacred song of springtime to fight back Bibun, which is winter, she said. Teammate and Friedley's sister, Juliana Welter, said she hopes people can find new perspective in the installation. Quote, people have their own version of how the spring comes, but to maybe see the story we're putting on here with the merganser, the fire in his belly, singing the song of spring, like maybe they'll go, oh, that's a new way for me to see it, she said. Mert Wilkins Wright is a stand-in member of the team this year. It is her first time snow carving, an activity she made her both nervous and excited. It's definitely a learning experience, she said. She added, as someone who is mixed Afro-Indigenous, participating on Team Kauai and designing the sculptures has allowed her to connect with her Indigenous heritage through storytelling. Quote, this is Indigenous land, and I think that it is very overlooked, taken away. It's really important to, in the middle of the park in downtown, have it be like the centerpiece. I think it's very meaningful, she said. Team Kauai began working on the project just days before the shooting of 37-year-old Renee Good. They took a brief pause in their work to be with the community, but continued crafting sculpture the next day. Quote, we knew that it's important as artists to continue the work because what we're doing is important to bring joy and vitality to the downtown area, and we want to make sure that people can find solace in what we do, Friedley said. This week, Team Kauai has been working at Father Hennepin Bluff Park on the second sculpture of the public installation. The sculpture will feature imagery of a fox with kit surrounded by floral designs representing spring. She shared that the events over the last weekend, quote, have weighed heavily on our souls. Quote, many, many people have come up to just say, thank you so much for being out here and creating this work when everything is so chaotic and feels so upsetting right now in the Twin Cities. And people are really feeling that this artwork is important to bring them joy right now. And so we're happy to do that, she said. Friedley encourages community members to stop by the parks to see Team Kauai's progress on each sculpture. The team plans to finish the second sculpture at Father Hennepin Bluff Park on Friday. Other parks included in the art installation include Nicollet Island Park and the Graysco Park. The project concludes the first week of February. And I just, when I read that article, you know, it just brings balance, because it is about balance. With all the hatred that 47 projects on the people living on this land, we have to balance it with love. And all those people that are resisting in Minneapolis, it's because they love each other. They love their city. They love who they are as human beings. And through that love, they're able to withstand minus 12 degree weather. They wrap themselves and they carry on. And I know it's been really hard for the sous chef, Sean Sherman. That's his home. That's his city. That's where his restaurant is. And on Saturday, he was in Park City, Utah at the Sundance Film Festival as part of this panel when this all happened. and he made sure people knew. And I'm sure he wanted to be home with his people. But at the same time, it's important to be at a place like Park City, Utah, and speak to the people, just like I'm sitting here and speaking to you. However you pray, or however you send the good energy out, do it for the people of Minneapolis. Do it for everyone all over this world that are living this incredible injustice. Last week, I opened with a spoken word by the sous chef. I got a lot of people asking me, they wanted to hear it again, where they could find it. So I thought I'd close the show today with the resistance will not be live streamed. I'll be back next week.
Stay home, cousin. You will not be able to log in, zone out, and scroll past daily photos of the genocide in Gaza. You will not be able to binge the next hit series on Netflix while bombs fall in Ukraine. You will not be able to DoorDash your fry bread with a side of Chipotle ranch dressing. Because the revolution will not be live streamed. The revolution will not be brought to you by Meta AI. It will not be delivered in oversized Amazon Prime shipping boxes. The revolution will not star the ghost of Charlie Kirk. It will not feature Christy Noem on horseback selling white freedom with a Louis Vuitton handbag. The revolution will not come with an authentic turquoise necklace from Urban Outfitters. Because the revolution will not be live streamed. The revolution will not be a white manifesto authored by Stephen Miller and marketed by Pete Hegseth. The revolution will not come with a pair of Sydney Sweeney jeans. The revolution will not come with a native cheekbone filter. And the revolution will not erase your debt with a promo code. The revolution will not be mentioned in your gold-plated Trump Bible. Because the revolution will not be live-streamed. There will be no highlight reels of police shooting down black brothers and sisters on body cam. There will be no drone footage of immigrant children running for their lives from Proud Boys dressed in ICE costumes. There will be no Fox News think tank pieces mansplaining why native genocide and black slavery isn't that bad. The revolution will not be on the Epstein list. The revolution will not be sponsored by Tesla with a photo of Elon giving a Nazi salute. The revolution will not come preloaded in your brand new Ray-Ban Meta glasses. The revolution will be live, brother. The revolution will be live, relatives. Our native people will be in the streets, cousin. Our black brothers and sisters will be in the streets. We'll all be in the streets demanding a better life. Our native seeds will be in the ground. Our kitchens will be alive with aunties cooking heirloom beans, grape dumplings, mole, jollof rice, the goosey soup, and pupusas. The revolution will smell like roasted blue corn and green chilies. The revolution will sound like the stampede of 10 million bison returning to their stolen land. Because the revolution will not be live streamed. The revolution will not be live streamed. The revolution will not be live streamed. The revolution will not be live. The indigenous revolution will not be live streamed. The black revolution will not be live streamed. The immigrant revolution will not be live streamed. The LGBTQ revolution will not be live streamed. The revolution will not be commodified and will not be sold at Target for a limited time only. The revolution will not have acai flavored White Claws as official sponsored drink. The revolution will not be franchised by Disney. And the revolution will not buy a U.S. citizenship with a golden Trump card. The revolution will not be live streamed. Will not be live streamed. Because the revolution will be live, cousin. The revolution will be live, brother. When is this revolution happening?
This has been a K-Mite podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast and also on our website, kmud.org.